And it is the Lean Into Artcast, a show where a couple of visual storytellers get together, take a walk around a topic. Sometimes that topic can be cute and sweet and fluffy and non-threatening, and sometimes it can reveal a hidden darker side that makes us go, oh gosh, I don't know the answer to that one. I'm going to think about it a little bit. Those are the most fun parts. My name is Jersey Droz, cartoonist and teaching artist, and with me, the other visual storyteller is...
I'm Rob Stenzinger, and we like to do this this thing called Lean Into Art, and you know, from a lot of different backgrounds, right? So yeah, I'm sometimes visual storyteller, sometimes game designer, sometimes UX guy. So yeah, we all wear a lot of hats around here, don't we?
We do, and more I find it's harder to explain to people what I do for a living. Even though, like the last 6 months, like I've made most of my living off of comics, which is great. Then I get to feel like, hey, according to traditional definitions, I'm a cartoonist. But when you explain, like, oh, but I also teach, and I also, I do storyboards, I do character design, I do all these other things. So what am I? I'm a visual storyteller. You know, that sums it up. But it's imprecise, right? A summary is always imprecise.
And so many different people are actually visual storytellers, right? And sometimes we're that as, you know, like by choice for an activity. And sometimes it's more of a longer, I don't know, whether it's learned or inborn, where you just want to do that as a more primary aspect of how you're engaging in trade, you know? So I don't know. I think I've tried to find roles closer and closer to that as I get older. But I've also seen people just show up and be a visual storyteller for, you know, a few minutes, a couple hours.
That's true. It can be a vocation. It can be a hobby. It can also be an affectation. It can be a natural inclination, right? I'm somebody who communicates best visually, whether I'm communicating with people on my team at my job that has nothing to do with art, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the kind of stuff we talk about on the show. And the way we do it, I'll just breeze through this. I'm not going to put you on the spot and make you do a metaphor for the system, Rob, because I know you got curveball. Curveball, what is that referring to? If you're new to the show, we've got a system of the way we attack these topics. We start out with a curveball, intellectually warm ourselves up, question that it's not meant to have a pat answer, spend a couple minutes on that. Then we dive into the topic, the main topic of the show, start out discussing it in the abstract for a little bit, 10,000 feet up. And then we don't want to leave you hanging with a bunch of, you know, inapplicable philosophy. So then we go on the ground and talk about actual, you know, things, ways to put these abstract thoughts into use into your life as a visual storyteller. So with that, let's go to curveball. I need a warm-up, Rob. It's been a crazy couple weeks, and I really need somebody to kick me in the back of the neck, intellectually speaking.
I don't know if this is as harsh as a kick in the back of the neck. It's less of a Taekwondo warm up. Maybe it's more of a Tai Chi warm up. How about? It's also a little selfish too, where I'm curious to pick your brain about it's a little bit of a thread that we've had going on in our conversations, mostly on the Extra Lean podcast, the sister podcast to the Lean Into Art cast. And we've been talking about how I've been working on trying to do more journaling, get some stuff out, and share reflections on the things I'm working on a more regular basis. Like I once did a couple years ago. And I'm wondering, with what, and so I'm hoping that I get to play like a pawn or an avatar for others listening to this who are considering doing more of that sort of creative journaling, like art journal reflection type stuff. I'm curious about advice you have as far as ways to lower friction for that and be opportunistic for it.
Like, be opportunistic.
I'm guessing that I'm probably letting opportunities slip by as far as when I could or when I could make time for journaling or ways to make it easier, triggers for it, because sometimes it'll, like, I'll have time for it, but then I'll be sort of thinking, oh, these ideas don't sound, you know, that's like, I had a thought on those, but maybe I'm not ready to really dive into those. And now I'm kind of just twiddling my thumbs. So maybe I'll just do something else.
Yeah.
So
reducing the friction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll turn it around. What causes you friction specifically? Or going into too much personal detail, you know, or you can get as candid as you want on this, but I'm just curious, when you say friction, what's causing you friction? What are the things that are making you stop from hitting that button?
Let's see. Sometimes it's, I'll say most of the time it's just I just don't have the thoughts sort out enough, even though I know sometimes the talking it through helps sort things out. It still doesn't feel as, friendly or like I'm going to get much out of that. And maybe it was the whole, like, I generated how many dozens of Polytechnicasts I didn't share when I was having a regular commute and I was doing, I just talked them up to practice. Maybe I'm just not used to, committing to those recordings. I'm not sure. Yeah.
Do you feel like when you do the Lena Tartcast, what we're doing right now, do you feel like you have your thoughts fully formulated and planned out and you have everything coalesced into a thesis statement?
I would say more yes than no. Maybe not 100%, but more so. Yeah. I mean, having a little bit of a banner, because we're very, very topic driven, even though we explore and meander through the topics and purposefully try to discover as we go, that there's still a lot of context and focus and sort of this foothold on the whole thing. And maybe I'm lacking that foothold.
What happens if somebody listens, let me put it this way. What happens if you released the Polytechnicast and it isn't that focused? What happens if you release the Listen to Rob Commute to Work show? Because there's a point of friction here and you said it doesn't feel focused. Okay, well, let's ask the question. What happens if it does get out? Let's say I stole them from you. I stole your discs and I put them online. What's your reaction?
Oh, no, the hidden tapes are out. First I'd be like, dang it. Then I'd be like, oh, well, cause I mean, I had the intent of trying to share them. But then decided for, a lot of them, I thought, that's just not focused enough. Or, by the time I got to the end of it, I had, a greater insight, but then no time to finish the recording, that kind of thing, because it was so tied to that commute window. Mm-hmm. And I'd have one reason or another to not do that. But if they got out, I would be, I would not be too worried, but I, as soon as I slip into that mode, I think maybe I'm not being of service enough to the audience. Maybe I'm just being indulgent and lazy. Mm. Right. That's, it doesn't make journals that where there are completely self and, internally focused. I think that's super valid and I like hearing that as well.
Oh, okay. I'm going to ask you
I don't like hearing it.
Another squishy question.
Yeah.
And I don't want to belabor this, but this is interesting to me.
Okay.
When you say, I want to be of service to the audience, define what you mean by being of service.
Even if it's the most mild, like, oh, interesting. There you go.
Oh. So it's a mild, oh, interesting. Okay.
And then building up from there to like, oh, wow, neat.
Sure.
So yeah, just a reaction like that. And which means that it was at least entertaining in a way of like, oh, yeah, someone else is going on this creative journey stuff. And they're like, oh, yeah, neat. They were chewing on that same thing I was trying to puzzle on, whether or not there's a direct takeaway or not. And once in a while, maybe there's a direct takeaway too.
So what you're describing is Rob's commute to work could be of service to people.
Maybe. I don't know.
Because if
maybe
says,
I'm not being honest about the mild reaction. So I guess I'm worried that it just meets nothing, where it's like, oh, wow, that was boring, or what have you. So,
okay. I'm done with my line of questioning. But
okay.
It seems to me, and this isn't to say like, oh, just put rubbish out there, right? But it seems to me that releasing and shipping it means that it's going to hopefully get better all the time. So yeah, there may be some stinkers in there where it's like, you know, I don't know what I was going to say today. And I could tell you that there are plenty of Thunder Punch dailies. I can't name them because I don't remember, but I remember doing this a lot, saying like, oh, I wish I had time to talk about this other thing, but I guess I'll talk about that in a future show, and I never get to it. You know, and I just count on the listeners to say, hey, Jersey, you hinted at doing this thing. I'm counting on them to remind me. And if they don't, it wasn't of interest to them. I don't have to cover it. And if I forget about it, no harm, no foul, right? Mm-hmm. But just doing the thing makes you get better at it. And, yeah, I guess you don't have to ship them then. But, I mean, as long as you're doing the practice. But mm-hmm. I think also shipping them and releasing them sort of, for me at least, it relaxed me about it, because I knew that the bad ones were out. People heard me at my worst, quote unquote, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I'll just make sure the next one's better. And then the other thing I think about is this was on a Thunder Punch Daily, and I think it was episode 100, and I talked about, maybe not, maybe it was, I don't remember what episode it was. But I talked about how I made a pact with myself that I was going to try to live life as if it's 5 years from now, not in terms of planning or anything, but remember the story of when I went up to do a public speaking gig and I thanked the wrong town?
Yeah.
I did that.
It was a good story. I'm laughing. Yeah, not laughing. It was a good story.
Well, I laugh about it now because it was a couple years ago. But and it was totally the old joke, right? The rock band goes on stage and like, thank you, Cleveland, and they're in Detroit, right? Yeah. And I totally and I was being paid by a certain library, and I thanked the wrong library. Big blunder. And I thanked the wrong library in a town, or the library that I named was sort of considered like from an adversary town of the town.
A rival
town. Mm. So I got booed by 500 people. And let me tell you, being booed by 500 people does not feel good. It feels terrible. It feels humiliating. And it was at the top of my talk. I had 15 to 20 minutes to go on that thing. And I started off with that, right? And I'm just going to breeze through the story. I go through my talk, and I think I saved it because I'm funny and I'm engaging. I got the audience laughing and interacting with me. And I think, okay, whew, nobody's going to remember that blunder I made. Afterwards, a couple hundred people came up to talk to me, shake my hand at the end. Every one of them said, boy, that was a great talk. Too bad about the thing you did at the top, though. Every one of them. So like, on top of it, I got that extra reinforcement, right? I'm driving home in the car and I'm like, this feels awful. I'm the biggest idiot who ever lived. And it's not like, I don't think my career is over or anything, but I just felt bad. I insulted 500 people, and I, you know, instead of feeling like a big shot from going up on a stage and doing a good job of talking, I just felt stupid. And then I remembered that, you know, this is going to be a good story to tell someday. This is going to be something that makes people smile at least, right? When will that happen? Probably five years from now. And I thought, okay, you know, let's allow ourselves to be foolish once in a while. And the way we do that is by remembering that whenever we look foolish, we're going to have a great story a few years later. So I think that that's what reduces the friction for me. But, you know, I mean, it's an oscillating thing, right? I overwork my pages. You've seen some of the stuff I've been doing. Well, actually, the RoboForce comic, which people could read at toyfinity.com, totally making those pages a lot harder than I should. Why? Because you get into that zone and you want to be of service. You want to do a good job of it. You want everybody to go, wow, when they see the thing. But yeah. So it goes back and forth, right? But I think the important thing to remind ourselves of is that I think it's so important to allow ourselves to be foolish every once in a while, to look foolish, because A, it's human, and B, it gives us interesting stories and learning experiences, right? That's another one, learning experiences.
You're you've re-completely sold me on it. And so, I mean, obviously you knocked that curveball way the heck out of the park.
Look at me.
Metaphor of the curveball. And I appreciate that. That's really cool. Huh? And I have, similar inconsistencies on that, because some of what I do, designing and prototyping systems and whatnot, and is so based on saying, hey, get your assumptions out, get them out in front of you. Now you can face them and test them. All those unpublished Polytechnicasts are untested assumptions. Are they really that bad? Would have who knows, right? They could be me, flubbing here and there, but a lot. But I don't know. I won't know because I didn't test it. I didn't. That's one of the reasons why the sharing is so good. And it's funny. Anyway, thank you.
And I think also an audience gets to be part of the decision making process on whether or not it is actually of service. And they won't be able to make that decision until they get to see the thing.
Exactly. So that's one of the things where you can have a false confidence or a false fear on the whole thing, where it's like, hey, I'm just not testing this idea. I get to live with this assumption, and I didn't put it in front of anyone else to then see their reaction and learn from it.
Yeah, and if their reaction is not helpful to you, then you get to walk away from that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. All right, sir. That was good.
No, I mean, it's important to note that this isn't something where you get to like confront it, look at it, and then say a few words like we just did, and then go, all right, I don't have to deal with this again. Guess what? Like a superhero story, every day you have to get up in the morning and decide whether or not you're going to be a good guy or a bad guy, right? Every day you have to get up in the morning and face these same things over again. And the consistency is a baseline, an average. It's not... You don't always win that battle, right? Did I just say things? Mm-hmm. I hope I did.
You did, and that's a lovely level set as well, where it's like, this is a fluctuating thing that changes over time. Just because one of them flubs doesn't mean that they're all going to, and just because one of them is awesome and everyone sends you emails about it, then doesn't mean everyone's going to be. but that is a. And that's wild, and that was. It resonates with all sorts of different experiences. So that's super cool. I could prattle on and on,
unless you want that topic to take over this episode, we can go there.
No, this is good. This is, yeah.
All
this
right.
Good.
I'll tell you what, we'll say this. We'll talk more about that in a future episode.
Shit. We like them.
All right. So then it's time for me to hit the stinger. Tapped one of the grim ones.
Exactly. Something's gonna grab me.
Yeah. Well, it just says Zentradi theme, and I forget which ones these are. I got Zentradi theme in my soundboard, SDF1 theme, Miss Macross, Rick Hunter's theme, Alien Attack. I meant
for Alien Attack, happiest one.
Probably. I meant for a cheerful one, because we're doing a cheerful topic today.
That is a good point. Hey, no worries.
You ready to have some fun, Rob?
Yeah, exactly. Our topic today, Jersey.
Yeah.
What's this all about? I think, 10,000 feet up. We're trying to frame this whole thing up. We want to explore a little bit of the community that's chosen to gather around Lean Into Art.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, go ahead.
No, please, you.
Well, it's and just taking a fresh look at, I think there's sort of a where Lean Into Art began thing a little bit, and not where we're going to bring out a boring slideshow and we'll walk you through all the evolution, but like, there's some interesting snapshots. And then recently we've been really thinking about like, what does it mean to like be a leaner? And in case you don't know what that term is, it sounds, maybe it's derogatory, like it's a fast food, you got time to lean, you got time to clean kind of thing. But actually leaner is just, it's obviously related to the name and, you know, lean into art. And that's really putting forth your effort to make things and to also notice that it's really close to the word learner.
Yeah.
It's just missing one letter. And so what's your definition of the word leaner, Jersey? Or what makes a leaner?
What I wrote in the notes was people who make stuff. All kinds of stuff. I would put a subcategory under that of like self-motivated learner too, right? But I think that the act of making stuff is a learning process. Because as we talked about just in the curveball, sometimes it's going to look good. Sometimes you're going to say, what kind of monster did my hands make today? But people who make all kinds of stuff, whether it is polished or whether it is loose and half formed, people who make stuff and then share it. Yeah. You disagree? Yeah.
I completely agree. Likely with that is some kind of ongoing path. It's not like you just did it once, right? I mean, so it might be hard to do your first thing. So you make your first short story and you share it. You make your first single panel comic or your first mini comic. I mean, any kind of place where you get on board this visual storytelling train, you know, where does it go next? How are you continuing to pursue it? So there's likely that pursuit feeling in there. Hence, you know, the verb lean.
Yeah. And I see I put the notes, or I don't know if you did, people who, the word is bravely, I would say courageously, people who courageously share the stuff they make. Because, and when I say that, I'm not being glib.
Pandering.
Right, or pandering. Because there is a courage involved in putting, because it's personal. It's something that hopefully came from a really, you know, sincere place in you. And you're putting it on display for people to judge and react to, or not react to, which is a kind of judgment too. And that can be very uncomfortable.
And we've had episodes on that. Like that can take a kind of grit to be like, well, I'm going to keep sharing it.
Yep.
And saying, why are you sharing it? And all that kind of stuff. It's a wild can of worms to open up to start doing this kind of thing. And can lead to all sorts of interesting places. Likely it's some kind of ongoing learning path. And if you're putting yourself into that, then you're a leaner. And
yeah,
there you go.
And when we say making stuff, what kind of stuff do you make if you're a visual storyteller? People are going to be saying, okay, Jersey must mean comics. Because that's all he cares about.
That's the Jersey brand. Of course it includes comics. And comics draw a lot of our attention because they're a medium that involve so many disciplines. But every single one of these, I mean, honestly, I was thinking that if you are a poet, you still could be a visual storyteller. Are you trying to evoke some kind of feeling of a space? Are you trying to cause some kind of picture in someone's head, right? I mean, there's just so many ways to do that.
I mean, E. Cummings is a good example of a visual storyteller in poetry, because he uses space a lot to direct the pacing of the poem. He'll do a hard return 20 times between different lines of the poem.
Oh gosh, yeah.
I use his stuff in my classrooms all the time to explain how, you know, poetry is a form of visual storytelling. And there's actually a video on Vimeo. I'll have to look it up. I posted a video a while back for my visual rhythms segment of one of my classes where I wrote some of the lines from the Jabberwock. And, you know, you write it out one way and you just read it. And then you write it out another way where you change the sizes of the letters and the spacing between the words, and you read it totally different. And I'm like, that's what we need to be thinking about when we make comics, right? So, yes, I would agree that poetry, for sure. Making stuff can also be what we were talking about during the curveball. Just journaling your stuff, right? That's a form of storytelling. You're collecting your thoughts on the day, and you're maybe not even actively trying to coalesce them into some kind of essay, but you're recording them, and then the patterns will emerge. This is what happens in writing, and I'm sure you've experienced this, Rob. You start writing, and then patterns emerge, and you can detect them, and then the themes sort of reveal themselves to you through the act of putting things on paper or on your screen, right?
Mm-hmm. Which, again, related to the curveball, it's all the more incentive to get it out and to do some kind of collecting of it, depending on your intent with it, right? If you're making a book, maybe you don't want to share the book as you write it. Maybe you do.
Yeah.
Or, not to completely emphasize the less obvious, but this really is to say that we're being inclusive when we're defining storytelling, and even when we're saying visual storytelling. And so, you know, of course that reaches anything from illustration and trying to show some kind of when someone does a drawing and they show the effect of gravity and someone and how a character is standing and whatnot, they're conveying a lot more information than just like there's a person on the ground. You know, there's action going on. Something led to it. Something's resulting from it.
Yep.
It could be fan art. Could be.
oh, come on, say it, Rob. Say games. That's
could be games. Oh, I've been holding out. Yes, games. So games, obviously. Yeah. Okay. So then, wow. Welcome to that giant trapdoor of like, boop. You fell into now the interactive aspect of visual storytelling, and there's a whole bunch of things within that realm. So you could be doing anything from laying out elements on a web page to get a conversion for selling a book to making a game that is all about. Let's see. I've been playing the Ouya lately. Well, it could be just making a game that's essentially what is it called? You know, I've been playing a lot of Heroes of Loot, where it's essentially riffing off of the classic Gauntlet the overall game design, which is many decades old now. But you have the whole, you know, we're a bunch of heroes going on adventure, and they have there are visual there are elements in that environment that convey what is good for you, what's bad for you, and where are you supposed to go, and what are the order of events. I mean, you have to somehow convey that information and try to show change in the experience. Right, so your character starts out weaker and gets stronger. You, start out healthy, and you might be about to, you know, bite it because you're surrounded by these difficult little things that spit out these little pixelated ham-looking things that are hard to kill. Anyway,
What was it called? Heroes of Loot?
Heroes of Loot.
Heroes of Loot.
And it's not the instrument loot. It's literally like, you know, cha-ching,
cash.
Loot. Yeah.
Cash money.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, games, visual storytelling as well.
Sure. I mean, and then also just like doodle sketches, you know, some of my favorite artists to follow on the internet. The reason why I follow them is because they post these irreverent sketches that you would see on somebody's memo pad when they're on the telephone. And they're so fun and vibrant and just absolutely delightful. This is another, gosh, all of this is going to tie back into the curveball, because it's like when I go on to the web to follow up what other artists are doing, I do not have the attitude of, you know, leaning back, arms crossed. All right, artists, impress me, you know.
No, impress me again.
Yeah. What am I here for? You know, It's much more of a, again, leaning in. I'm looking in, going like, all right, what do we got? And then this guy's got Megan Brennan's doing more funny pencil pup sketches, and I adore her sketches. Somebody did a really beautiful illustration of He-Man. That I love that, right? And then like the next thing will be a comic. As long as it's interesting, you know, that's something we talked about with Ryan Estrada, Take a Drink, is being boring is the bad thing, and being interesting encompasses a lot of things. And part of being interesting is, part of the recipe of being interesting, I think, is being really, really into what you're doing and and engaging with it, pass or fail, whether you do a good job of it or a bad job. I posted a drawing today on Facebook where I said, here's the three things I don't think I did right with it. Not to elicit pity, but more or less to say, like, hey, I learned something on this page, right? So,
which, yeah, that's a really interesting thing. Like, I had a visual, like, the way you described, I forget her name. Like, I haven't checked out her stuff.
Megan Brennan?
Her website. So, when you have a chance to go to another artist's blog, in a way, it's almost like you get to have this, they're like, yeah, okay, cool, tour my studio. And you get to essentially search for treasure, where you're like, hey, what do you do that's like what I do, or not like what I do, or, you know? It's just an opportunity to explore, and that's that can be pretty darn exciting.
And making stuff and courageously sharing it is inviting people into the virtual studio, right? Whereas making stuff and not sharing it, which is your prerogative, is saying my doors are closed. Don't come in. You don't want to see the mess in here.
No tours allowed.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, so yes, I think we've defined what we mean by leaner and what their psychological makeup is and what their behavior is, right? So do we want to talk about some of the, because I just thought it'd be fun to have a casual discussion about some of the things the different people who have interacted with the Lean Into Art show are up to, some things that they made, some things they shipped that I thought and you thought were, you know, topic worthy. So it'll be a bunch of mini topics. What are the leaners up to? And the topic for the show, or the title for the show that we did came up with, was like, what happens when we commit to making things? We're about to find out. We're going to go see what happens when people commit to making things, right?
So now we're going to tour your studios. Here we come.
Hey, they left the door open, dude. So I
did.
All right. Well, I'm going to use scary music again as we go on the ground.
It's keeping on theme.
Uh-oh. Coming into your studios. All right.
Yeah.
So can we talk about Lucas? Lucas Hegg?
Mm-hmm.
So let me pull up what he did recently. Well, it was a while ago, but I just thought this was great. I'll try to describe this in audio for the folks who only consume the show via audio, but we do stream the show live on YouTube. I don't know if there's an easy address. Comicsaregreat.tv takes you to the YouTube feed, but we do stream the show live every other Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern time, where you can watch the show and interact with us live. So it's theinkbot.tumblr.com. Did you get a chance to look at this thing, Rob?
Oh, yeah.
Is this cool or what? So what Lucas did is he took a sprite character from a game. I don't know if this is from a game or not, but it's just like a little, like, looks like a 16-bit sprite character. And then he reinterpreted it as like a pencil drawing, and then scaled it back to a sprite drawing again.
Yeah. What a cool exercise that is.
I don't
recognize the sprite. It looks...
Let's see if he says what this is. He says, from sprite to sketch, back to sprite. I'm in the process of making the sketch I recently posted into a sprite. I ditched the vest and altered the legs and torso somewhat. Oh, it doesn't say.
I don't know. Could be an original one, right? I mean, it wouldn't matter what the source would be. I was just curious if it was a source we'd be able to share with the audience. But even if it's an original one, so you're like working on, you know, a game project, and you need to get new perspective on this character and try to bring some life to it. Bring a different angle, like make the character more threatening or show more energy. Like, so I would say the resulting pixelated character has, there's just a little more oomph in that sort of the flowing energetic hair, stuff like that. So if you're like trying to find a new angle on it, instead of like poking at that existing art, great way to get new perspective, to just say, okay, an inspiration.
What I love about this too is it's a way to explore style, right? When you sit down to do a project and you're thinking, okay, what style should I use? I mean, if you're somebody who messes around with a lot of styles, there are artists who are like, this is the style I work in, and there's no question, I don't have to figure this out. But let's say you're working on, you know, a variety of different projects, different things, or drawing different kinds of things. And you're like, well, what's the style that would be appropriate for this? And I'm working on some character designs. Do I want to go really cartoony and really abstracted and simplified? Or do I want to go more detailed? How does this character feel in a variety of styles? And I think this is just a great exercise to get your mind attuned to working in all those different mindsets, right? Take Mario, right? Take Mario from the original Mario Brothers game, extrapolate that into a pencil sketch, and then go back again based on just the pencil sketch. This reminds me of, isn't there like a creative game where you take a notebook and you just write a sentence on one page, and then you hand it to the person next to you, and they have to sketch what you wrote in that one sentence, and then the next person in line gets just the sketch and has to construct a sentence from the sketch? Have you heard of that game?
I have not heard of it, and it sounds like a great game. I'd like to play it.
Rob's jotting it down because he's probably going to be using this in his next workshop. I'll warn you, it does not work that great with 10-year-olds, but with adults, it's a really fun game.
People have to buy into the whole, like, I'm trying to recapture this sentence. It's almost like that's the prize, is like, how close or far do we get to the original kind of thing?
It's more about being delighted by how disjointed and far afield things can get, because then the next person in line has to take that new reconstructed sentence and do a sketch based on that. Mm-hmm. Right. And just goes around and around like that until you have like this weird telephone game. But this reminds me of that a little bit. It's this idea of like, start in one place, take it to another place, then forget about the place you started. Now try to go back home again, just based on this new information that you landed on. So
nice. Yep, absolutely. It's a very inspiring exercise, actually.
Yeah, I could see doing this with like a variety of things. I could say like you could take even like a very, very a cartoon modern art style, like the 1950s UPA kind of animation style where it's very abstracted. Okay, take that. Take a character from that, like, you know, Gerald McBoing Boing, the noise-making boy. Extrapolate him into a painted style. Then from that, try to go into a more abstracted, cartoony style. It's a good example of somebody just thinking aloud through their work. I dig it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's anything else to say about it.
What's that? Or just we mentioned that we'll put a link to this post in the show notes, of course,
at leanintoart.com. Yeah. So let's talk about 30 characters in 30 days.
Oh my gosh. It is December now. So yes, November, wonderful month that it was, is over. And those of us who chose to say, yeah, I'm making a new character every day for the month of November. we don't have that moving over us every day anymore.
Characterize the psychological hurdles that you're jumping over when you're doing that every day on top of everything else you're trying to do.
It's completely a way to like you face your own demons, and it's like a little game. Meet your demons in the Dagobah swamp home game, and do it once a day, every day of the month. Where how do you consider your process for posting something just the basic mechanics of, like, if you haven't cleared that hurdle of like, where do I post things quickly and conveniently, or do I have to get that set up, and where do I what do I think about character design, what goes into something that I design as a character, what sort of will be the level of fidelity for these characters that I'm going to do, and you have to sort of face it that kind of commitment every single day. And you can really lower the hurdle on yourself if you wish.
I'm going to pull up some examples while you talk, Rob, because I'm going to pull up Joyce Ann Martin's 30 characters in 30 days summary while you talk about it. Keep going.
Yeah, cool. So so you could do things like, well, it's all about the sketching. It's about all, I want to capture the feel of a character because I've got their essence, and that's great. You could say, I want to write a short story and then just and doodle a character and whatnot, because I've seen people of different visual storytelling backgrounds take this in different ways. I've seen a 3D artist really hone their craft a couple years back. I'm trying to remember his name, and it's not coming to me, but because I took a couple years off from this. And anyway, so yeah, that'd be the basic gist. You make a new character for every day of the month of November. More or less the commitment baseline is new character every day, 30 of them in November. And then from there, obviously, all that other complexity ensues.
Oh, wow. Gosh, total sidebar, but I wonder what it'd be like if we tried to start something where it was like 30 journals in 30 days.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe.
I was going to be journaling about journaling, but yes.
So Joyce Ann Martin, who's actually, she's got a quest that we're going to talk about later on today, but she's interacted with the show before. So I was checking out her blog at inkgizmo.com. Blog.inkgizmo.com is where you can find a lot of her designs. I like this one. I like fishmen. I'm a big fan of fishmen, but it's cool to see just how varied. I mean, even though the style that she used was pretty consistent between all of these different character designs, just how wide it went. This looks like a rock guy. I'm going to load that up. And you did this too. Oh, here we go. Oh, look at this guy. So he's like robot and elf wizard character. Or stone golem kind of thing. He's got moss on him. But it's just fun to see like the wide variety of characters that she came up with over that time. She's got a great collection on her site, so you can just look at all of them, which you did too. Let me see if I can find yours.
That's cool. Yeah, I really I really enjoy Joyce Ann's collection of characters, and it seems like she went through a similar journey of I dig that she did a lot more female characters than I did. I tried to do more, but I just sort of I went with what was emerging, what did I gain traction on, you know, and just finish that to not be spending too much time on it every day. So yeah, these are really cool, and the different color palettes, the different sort of actions that the characters are taking, you know, so like you can explore poses, you can explore textures and palettes and styles. And it's just, yeah, it's fun. Like I noticed her pose, she mentions essentially it was like, it was a bit of a like freeing, or it was a month of no pressure discovery, which that's great. And I think that's a probably a stress healthy way to face this kind of challenge. I don't know. I tried to approach that. I don't think I quite got to Joyce's level of peace with it, but I wasn't too stressed about it either. So,
well, I was just thinking, you know, like that's something I was trying to get at the top of this little piece here, is that you're trying to do all this other stuff. You know, you got a life, you got a family, you got a job, and then you're trying to fit this into every day, and each one could be your last. This could be the one where it all falls apart for you, right? That's like a little mini in microcosm activity of what it's like to make stuff, right?
Exactly. And so it's a little bit of deadline practice, and that sort of adventurous, you don't really know the conclusion, but you do know it's not like this goes on for the rest of your life or a year or whatever. It's 30 days. And you know, that helps make it more palatable too, even if it is pretty disruptive.
Yeah.
But, for me, I used the heck out of my Android tablet, the, Galaxy Note 10.1. Yep.
Oh, you did. You did all of those on the Note?
Yeah, all of them.
That's cool.
I often would do a sketch that I would take a photograph of, and because that allowed me to build up a bulk of ideas where I wouldn't feel like overcommitted to drawing a character I didn't want to draw that day. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I'd grab it out of my mini moleskin and, you know, be like, oh, take a snapshot of it. And that's my background to then start, you know, finishing a sketch.
Well, that's a great idea. That's a really great idea. Okay. So it's really, I'll tell you from, I didn't get to participate in the thing. I shouldn't say I didn't. I chose not to. I wanted to. And I looked at my schedule realistically and I said, you know, that might be the straw that breaks the camel's back with the way my month is going. So I chose not to, but I desperately want to participate in it because it looks like so much fun. And I loved watching everybody's 30 characters posts going across my feed. But I was especially delighted by what you and Joyce were doing. So that was super cool. But it's something that I was going to say, it's like it's something you do any month, but I think it's probably more fun to do it during 30-30, right? Because you're watching everybody else do it.
Yeah, we'd be remiss to not mention a lot of us will do it on our own blogs or, you know, Instagram or Google Plus, whatever, or Tumblr.
Yeah.
But there is the actual sort of the event site, which was set up by Tyler James of comicstribe.com. And he instigated this monthly challenge and set up a domain for it. And actually, when you sign up in time, you could be posting to sort of like the Grand Central Station of 30 characters, which is a completely wild, huge feed of just hundreds of characters flying by. I'd be curious like what the stats are, like characters per second or something. It's not like, you know, like 1,000 per second, but it's like there's a wild amount of characters that are on that domain in particular.
Yeah, 30characters.com.
Yeah. Like, yeah, at least a dozen per hour or so, I would totally hunch estimate. Yeah, whatever, a little fun side note thing too. There is a bit of there's a slideshow thing that still works. I think it's one of the links in the top of the page. And someone I know cobbled that together a couple of years back, and it's still working.
The slideshow, I'm looking. Mm-hmm. Banner's character characters gallery?
Characters gallery, yeah, there you go.
All right, I'm going to hit that and see what happens.
Do, 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 do. Let's see what happens.
I've got a lot of tabs open, and my Chrome is choking. Ah, here we go. Oh, this looks awfully familiar. This looks like something. This looks like something that my friend Rob made.
I made it for two sites at the same time. We had a little gallery like this for a little while at Lean Into Art, and was making it for both sites at the same time. So you could actually put on your favorite music and chill out while you watch many characters flip by in a slideshow.
Actually, that could be like a really great an inspiration board, right? Mm. Have this running on the side while you're sketching and doing something else.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, to describe this in for the folks listening in audio, basically you hit that the gallery button, and then the whole browser goes dark, and then it just starts playing. What, it gives you about 2 seconds per character design?
Yeah. And you can pause it or navigate it on your own.
That's really cool. That's really cool. I'm seeing some familiar names in there too. So the 30 characters challenge, mm-hmm. 30characters.com. And good job, Joyce. Seriously.
Yeah.
We had to muscle through that month and come out.
Yeah, cool. Congratulations on finishing all 30. That rocks, Joyce.
Yeah, for sure. What else? What else we got? We got to get to quests pretty soon. Holy cow, we burn through these shows.
We're enjoying our tour of everyone's studio. We're like, hey, this is really nice. We're not, no sense of urgency.
Joe Gillespie is asking in the chat, any other cool monthly challenges coming up? Do you know of any, Rob?
November is a really big month. There's a lot of like voluntary ones. Like, I mean, I do see people doing 30 characters pretty much year round. That's a good question. None I know of offhand. December seems like a no fly zone comparatively.
Yeah, actually, December is like, and I'll spoil this ahead of time. I guess that's what the definition of a spoiler is revealing information ahead of time. There we go. How's that for redundant, Jersey? we're not issuing a new quest with this episode, even though we're going to be talking about the previous quest, because as I thought about it, I'm like, I have a quest locked and loaded, but I thought, it's December, man. Most people are not going to have time to be doing anything extra right now. Nor should they. Now's the time for focusing on people that you care about and all that stuff. So, but I know that in March, which sounds like a long way from now, but it's not, trust me, Mini Comics Day is sometime in March. Am I not mistaken?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Mini Comics Day. That's one.
And that one is, I think you're supposed to do an 8-page mini comic in 8 hours or less. Isn't that it?
Sounds right. Yeah.
At least that's how we do it in Ann Arbor, because every year we go to the Duderstadt Center on the campus of the University of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And
and Minneapolis Open Book hosts a Mini Comics Day.
Sweet. And it's usually, it's like around mid-March. So that's mm-hmm. one to look forward to. But then, you know, it's like these kind of challenges are something you just do all the time. I've put these kind of challenges in front of myself just for the pure fun of it. You know, okay, I'm going to do a mini comic in a week. I don't have any idea what the characters are going to be, what the premise is, or what the story is. I'm going to start on Monday, and I'm going to finish it the following Monday, and I'm going to try to do it in between all the other work I have to do. I'm only going to give myself like an hour and a half. You know, I've talked about this 100 times, is like the warm-up sketches where I set a timer, 20 minutes, that's all you get. If you're not finished, you stop drawing. You just stop. And it's a way to, you know, A, get yourself warmed up, build up a body of work, make neat things that are worth sharing with other people, and it gets you into a practice. It reduces some of that friction of drawing or committing to making a thing, right?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, very good approaches. Cool. So, yeah, and if any come by your radar, Joe, share them back with us, too. Be good to, maybe we could develop a little more of a radar for those kinds of things, too, to share them.
That would be a good thing, too, because we've got to lean into our calendar that we, which we should make more, bring more attention to, and that's what, like, we put scheduled other Lean Into Art casts on so people can, you know, get notified when the next episode is happening. We could, you know, start collecting some of these art challenges and putting them on that calendar, right?
Yeah. Interesting. Cool. Good idea. It has been captured.
Speaking of Joe perfect. Gillespie.
Perfect segue, yeah.
Yeah, he chimed in just at the right time because I wanted to talk about Dynamo City at Dynamo Deli. So Joe on his Tumblr has been posting all sorts of process sketches. Now, a lot of artists do this. I wanted to call Joe out because I think it's cool that he does this, that he's got all sorts of different things like the character designs, in-progress pages, sketches, you know, production elements for things that he's going to make. Mm-hmm. And what I love about this is this, again, is like this is part of that like getting to peek into somebody else's studio. You know, you might think, and as I have from time to time, I'm working on a thing today. This particular panel looks great. I'm going to capture it and I'll share it on Instagram or whatever, right? That's good, but it's like also it's just interesting. I catch myself being interested in seeing what other people are working on during the day, if for no other reason than just a check-in, right? What are we all working on? We're all in different places. We can't hang out, but what are you working on today? And just getting a quick snapshot of even something that's just like a crude sketch. I noticed that like I was on my Instagram feed, I was posting some like really loose and I think rather dumb robot face sketches. I was just doing robot faces and it was all just like me trying to get into a different headspace in terms of character design. It's like, okay, well, with robots, you can do all sorts of different shapes, but let's try to like take super cartoony, like, you know, again, going back to like UPA cartoon modern sort of distortions of the human face. But then because you're a robot, you can get away with that. Let's see what happens when I start trying to merge those two different disciplines together. And, you know, people are like, oh, I like this. I didn't ask for anybody to like it. I didn't expect anybody to like it. I just shipped it, got it onto the feed because I know that I like looking at what other people are working on during the day, right? But that friction can come in where you say, well, this isn't good. Right? My stupid robot faces aren't that good. And you can talk yourself out
which
of it.
Which isn't true, but I understand the feeling. Yes.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, am I doing a service here? Am I doing a service, right?
Yeah.
The truth is like, yeah, I like looking at close-up pictures of people's inks. I think it's cool. He says, why, yes, some buildings in Dynamo City do look like mustard bottles. You know, I thought it was cool that he's just letting us look in at the process and then also finish things. This is the definition what we were talking about at the top. Sometimes things are sketchy. Sometimes things are in progress or process. Sometimes it's a finished thing. But I don't know. Do you get any, let me ask you, do you derive any pleasure in watching other people's in progress stuff, even if you're not really getting like a complete narrative of it, even if it's just like a segment of here's the thing I'm kind of doing today?
Yeah, I mean, it's very, let's see, the amount of impact it has on me varies extremely, right? But I enjoy having that as like part of my info stream. You know, my info stream, it's that, you know, just that collection of the things I tune into and follow, the, you know, information I have close at hand and all that kind of stuff. And having I follow a lot of artists on purpose to be connected to just whatever they may be journaling and sharing and whatnot, which is, you know, oftentimes, you know, some kind of, it's tough when we only see the finished thing, because you can only have your assumptions and then how you are, I think you said something about, you said something cool about reverse engineering before we hit record, right?
Oh, that's so true.
Reverse engineering is what learning is all about, right? I'm always ready, not always right. I try to be ready to quote as often as I can. And I thought that's really interesting. But if that's all you have, then it's tough to, it's like without seeing the prior stages, you're less equipped for that reverse engineering. So it's really fun to like see the prior stages before the finished stuff.
Well, yeah, definitely. Learning comes into that too, right? Like when I was, this is, you know, early days of the internet or even pre-internet, when I was first getting into doing comics, and I had to infer what my favorite artists were using. What are they using in order to get that kind of line? I love Walt Simonson's lines. How's he pulling that off? And then in this day and age, because artists share this stuff, we actually can find out what tools they're using to achieve these kinds of effects. And yes, I'll cut you off there, one guy who's just saying this. It's not the tool, it's the user. You bet it is. But certain tools can achieve certain effects with more ease and more grace than other tools. Let's say that. So,
and tools can be a great MacGuffin that gets you connecting with that other's experience.
Yes.
So, you know what? Maybe there's you may not understand all the experience and encapsulate all the choices that someone would make in a given situation, but if you have that tool and you're trying to notice other things and maybe discover other choices beyond just the tool, that can be a helpful device. Even though, yes, tools aren't, the tool isn't going to solve it for you.
I was just, you know, I was anticipating the devil's advocate on that one. But yeah. So like I had to infer what tools they were using, and I had to like, you know, and sometimes I was right, sometimes I was wrong. But now there's less guesswork. So there's that aspect. Mm-hmm. But also, I mean, the big one for me is that I really enjoy having a feed full of here's what I'm working on today. And doesn't have to have any more commentary than that. Here's the thing I'm doing. Boy, this is fun. I had a lot of trouble with this one, you know, that's, mm-hmm. And I think that's why I've fallen in love with Instagram recently. Like in the last like year or so, I really, really started to like it a lot because I'm not getting political commentary as much. I'm not getting, share this or baby seals will die kind of posts that you get on Facebook, right? You've seen those, right?
Yes.
I'm just getting pictures of things that people are celebrating for the most part. Right. And then there's the occasional snarky one, like, can you believe this guy? But for the most part, it's people just celebrating things. And a lot, and because I follow a lot of artists, it's people celebrating their art, which is so much fun to look at. I look at Instagram probably like 10 times a day, just a quick check in. See, what have I missed?
I totally agree. It's really, really rich source of just a lot of fun visual scrapbook and kind of a day to day experience stuff.
Yeah. And, yeah. and it's so different than things like Pinterest and other sites where, like Tumblr and Pinterest, it's like I'm more collecting materials. Like, look at all these neat things that I'm putting into different boards so I can refer to them later. Whereas Instagram is checking in on pals. Instagram mm-hmm. is like, hey, what are the people I like doing today? Neat.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Speaking of things that people are making, I'm going to talk about Yi Wang, who interacts with the show from time to time and actually participated in a quest this time. He did a book called Heart of Occults, a graphic novel, which I have right here. And
sweet.
It's really, really pretty. I'll pull up he put it online on the web as well. And he did put a warning on it that it is, some parts are not safe for work. It's not totally G rated. I think it was very thoughtful of him to do that, but you know, we're all grown ups here. I don't think anybody's going to be like, oh dear, there's, takes place in ancient China and there is, you know, some swordplay and violence in the story. But I don't think I didn't feel like anything in this was like really like, oh.
It's not gratuitous. It's not necessarily part like an especially overemphasized device.
Right, right. Gotcha. It feels, but I mean, if you've watched Kurosawa films, if you've watched, or if you've read like Miyazaki's Nausicaa and the Valley of the Wind graphic novels,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's of that order. There's some fantasy elements in it. And but I'll tell you, I'll pull up one of the pages from his webcomic. This is why you guys should read it. Okay, so here's a sequence. It's not important. Well, it's important that we see that there's fantastical stuff here. There's like a shaman or shaman, and there's like mystical animals. And you can see that the shaman is talking in a crazy language. Now, Rob, you know I'm fascinated by sound use in comics. Okay, so...
Yeah.
How do we know that he's talking in a funny language? I mean, I'll let you describe what you see on the screen.
I know he is expressing based on, I mean, he's using word balloons.
Right.
Yet the contents of the word balloon, I don't recognize as symbols based on, it's not, it doesn't look like any actually, you know, language I'm familiar with. Right. Okay. Well, other than, actually, come to think of it, is it encoded?
Because look closer.
Yeah, is it encoded? Oh, that's nuts.
Read it backwards.
Read it backwards. Who? And then how?
Yeah.
Where do you get this? Oh my, that's freaking cool.
So what he did, I'm describing this for the folks in the audio. He took the language, he took English, just flipped the words, reversed it, and then he kind of obscured the letter forms with white scribbles over top. And he even has a note in, when you buy the print book, he has a note in there saying, like, some of the broken text in the book are not printing mistakes. They are meant to represent a kind of dialect that's unfamiliar or unclear to the protagonist. Sorry for the confusion. I guess some people didn't understand it. But what I loved about this is you have this dialect or language that is unclear to you when you hear it, but when you listen carefully, you can deduce what they're saying, right? And he's encouraging you to read carefully in the story. And but when you do pay attention, this is where he did like a really nice thing as a storyteller. He rewards you for paying close attention because you get more out of the conversations happening in the book when you follow what those, you don't have to read them. You can follow just by looking at what the character is doing and inferring that, okay, he's saying some kind of like garbledygook. Now, what he could have done is have an asterisk in each balloon with a translation caption box underneath. It'd be like, this is what he's saying. But I love that he sort of playfully invites you to look again. And it gives the implication that, like, when you hear somebody with an enormously thick accent and you can sort of make out what they're saying, right? Or like for me, like hearing a Welsh accent, it's really hard for me to parse through a Welsh accent. I know it's English. I know those are words that I use, but the way that they're being spoken here is very difficult for me to sift through. And it feels like that, right? It gave me that impression.
Oh, yeah.
Is that cool or what?
Yeah, I'm blown away. That is one of the coolest things I have seen.
And there's a whole bunch of stuff in this book like that. And on top of it, he does a lot of layouts where it's not segmented. I mean, you can see it on this page that we're looking at now. It's not segmented into panels. It's like he's using the art itself to create a sense of pacing and flow. And so instead of being in this, you know, rigid grid-like structure of panels, he's letting the art define the spaces and the pacing, right? I forget what that's called. Like it's like a free form. It's like the stuff that Eisner did a lot, like this free form kind of storytelling style. But I got this book from him, like I think like a year or two ago, and I just really enjoyed it. And I realized that I've never talked about it on the air, and I need to talk about it more because it's really good. And you can read it for free, and you can get the print edition, and that's at heartofacult.comicdish.com. We will link to that in the show notes.
Awesome.
He is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, absolutely. The layout is also, I would have been impressed without that amazing, clever device that he probably invented. The sort of quote unquote panel layout or the visual spacing and whatnot, really, really clever use of, basically two layers of negative space. You've got the negative space that's the gutter on the outside, that, and then there are sort of whooshes and whisks and whatnot, sometimes the shape of an animal, that draw your eye around that space, but then inside of it are little groupings of the characters interacting and whatnot, but with enough negative space in there to also draw your eye through and understand. This is not a confusing page.
No. No, and the other thing I'll say for the book, this is something to watch if you're a nerd like me. E has awesome sound design. I will say this. I will stand by this. The whole book is full of fantastic sound design, and I wish more cartoonists thought about sound as much as E does. Made me so happy to read this book. So,
wow, cool.
But yeah, I want to do one more. At least before we get to quests,
let's do it. Let's run for it. Let's get through the list, man. Let's
all
do
right,
it.
All right.
We can do it.
So, okay. Diju-san, of Gray is the web comic. So she's got a pre-order up for her volume 3 collection. And we've talked about Dee before. Dee's participated on the show in the past, but, beautiful, beautiful manga. And she did an Indiegogo campaign and she met her goal. So good for her. But 3 days left to contribute to the Indiegogo campaign to basically pre-order the next collection of her graphic novel, Gray Is. And if you haven't read it, it's exceedingly beautiful. God, her backgrounds are exquisite. It's very heartfelt. And her Tumblr feed is really, really fun to watch, too. She posts lots and lots of sketches. She does live streaming. She's exemplifying everything that we celebrate on the show, of like making stuff, shipping stuff, sharing stuff, and engaging with people and opening up the process, letting people see all the stuff that she makes as she's making it. But yeah, here's some examples of her art. Look at this. Look at this.
Yeah. Wow. That is lush.
And the black and white stuff. I mean, like, tell me I can zoom in on this. I mean, like, her backgrounds are just, they make me cry. They make me cry that I'm not going to reach that.
Yeah.
And I've seen her work. This is the real deal. This isn't a photo that she just like ran a Photoshop filter on. She drew that with her two hands. God, so good.
Man, that is, oh my God, look at that perspective.
That's bonkers. That's what that is.
So many subtle, yeah, wow.
So, I mean, it's at indiegogo.com/project/gray-is-volume-3, but we'll link to it in the show notes for you guys to follow. And then she's also, oh gosh, what is she on Twitter? Is it Diju-san on Twitter?
For porn's sake. I think she has two Twitters. I think there's a Gray Is, and I think there's a Diju-san. Yep.
Okay. But we'll link to him in the show notes. But, I mean, at the time of this recording, right? 3 days left. So if you were one of those people, and we do have some people who like watch the show like right after we stream it, I encourage you to go now to, actually, here's the short link, igg.me/@gray-is-volume-3. I can zoom in on it for you. There it is right there. Whoops.
Cool.
So, congratulations, Dee. I can't wait to see the new book.
Yeah, and it's funded. So that is super cool. It is funded, but also this is a great way to get in on it early as well. Yeah. So it's exciting.
And there's a whole bunch of different perks you can choose by contributing to it. So $40 gets you volume 2 and volume 3 for those who own volume 1. $50 gets you a signed hard copy of volume 3. Hard copy of Gray is logbook 2. 2 prints. It's just like a Kickstarter campaign. But like, whoa, looks like the $100 tier sold out. But anyway, wow. Yeah, you can contribute it what you think you feel like getting. But yeah.
Very cool.
And this one I posted on the Leading Tart Tumblr, I think, and on the Google Plus.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about Ashley Knapp, who's also participated on the show before. She's doing something really cool. She's just recording audio, but this goes back to the curveball, Rob. She does this nearly daily audio boo. Is it daily? December 5th? Oh, she took a few days off.
Yeah, frequent.
But in November, she was doing it nearly every day. And it's just, she's just sort of journaling. Because the neat thing about Audio Boo, by the way, for those who haven't heard of it, it's a smartphone app. I think it's on Android. It is on Android and iOS. Mm-hmm. And it allows you to record 5 minutes of audio. And you're limited to that. I think you have to pay for a premium account in order to get bigger, longer recording times. But you record 5 minutes, and then you're done. It gets posted to the feed, and it's like a social network kind of dealy with audio. And I've posted some audio boos before. Like when I went on trips and stuff, I would like record events as they happened and then share them out with everybody. But then you can also follow people up to create your own custom playlist. So like just like how Twitter is sort of like a playlist of text. Here comes all the different things people are saying, and I get to enjoy that. Audio boo can be that for audio. So it can be a way of getting kind of like podcast versions of what I was describing Instagram of, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But as you described at the top of this episode, sometimes it's not the most natural thing in the world for visual storytellers to communicate with their voice, right? And there can be some friction there. And there can be some, my thoughts aren't coalesced. My thoughts aren't fully formed today. And what I love about Ashley's feed is it is this wonderful combination of, here's the things I did today. Here's a few things I watched. Here's a few things I thought about. Other times it'll be like her husband's in the room and he's hassling her and she's trying to just do this thing and get it out the door. And he keeps making her laugh and he keeps interrupting her. And, it's fun to just get to eavesdrop on her life a little bit and watch that moment that many of us married people know where we're just trying to do a thing. And then the spouse comes in and is playful and, all heck can break loose. Right. But another thing that I was picking up on as I was listening to her journals was sometimes she's sharing resources. Sometimes she's talking about tools and sites and resources that I have not heard of. I read this book today. This book helped me in this way and that way. Well, she brought it to my attention. Now I got something to follow up on. So there's a lot of value in doing these kinds of things beyond just getting to listen in and eavesdrop on somebody else's life. There's also getting to hear her process as it comes together. She was like logging how many words she was doing in her NaNoWriMo project while going to school, right? And then talking about what she was reading in school and what she was reacting to. I got to find out how she feels about Mr. Darcy. But then I also got to hear about, I got this particular book, this particular tool, and it really helped me out in this way. Cool. Maybe I should look into that as well. So there's another case to be made for this kind of thing. But
Yeah, it's that's a really good point in that when we are doing that journaling, sometimes it's like these incidental details that come up just totally naturally as you're sharing this is how I started working on this project, and then I actually found a way to research photos a little bit better, which was neat. And all of a sudden, other artists are like, "Research photos a little bit better, way cool. I'd like to use that too." And it's just another ringing endorsement for that technique.
Yeah, so good on you, Ashley. And it's at audioboo.fm/Ctrl-Alt-Lee, CTRL-Alt-Lee, like Control Alt Delete, Control Alt Lee. But yeah, she makes me want to start playing around with Audioboo again. I mean, that service is kind of old now. It's been around a while.
Yeah, which is, hey, that's good that it survived. And that 5-minute limitation, maybe that's not a bad thing.
Well, and it's no frills. You don't get to like put like segue music or intros or anything. It's just a raw recording. And that's another reason I like it. And just like things like Vine and Instagram video, there's ways you can use that artfully, right? I did a boo once where it was just my students spontaneously started singing a Weird Al Yankovic song in class. And I broke out the phone and, you know, just grabbed that audio real quick. And I didn't do any, hi, this is Jerzy Drozd, and I'm about to do an audio boo with my telephone using audioboo.fm. And now we're going to listen to my students as they sing a thing. You know, it's just like, just, oh, I got to grab this right now. And that was too funny to just let sit on my phone. I got to share this thing, right?
Yeah. So. There's some good use out of that immediacy. Very interesting. Yeah, you brought up Vine and Instagram video as well. Similar creative limitations.
Yeah, for sure. All right.
Okay.
Let's talk about Ryan Estrada and take a drink.
Yeah. So he did a post pretty recently, and I've noticed he's been doing some posts via Medium.
Yeah.
Which is, that's kind of interesting in and of itself. But then this I thought this was like a jackpot of, I mean, just a wealth of information about essentially saying that if, you know, you've been making your comics, you have these files sitting around, it is not a high hurdle to clear to now package that thing up as an ebook. And he shares some ways to go about that. In both, here's a procedure, here's some steps, and it's pretty darn easy. But then also, he's automated it, of course, where Ryan is big on the automation, where, you know, he flicks, you know, where a butterfly sneezes in another continent, and Ryan's made 100 comics. So now he's sharing that power with you via this post.
Yep. We don't even need to say that much about it. It's at medium.com/artist/advice. Oh gosh, that's not a pretty URL. I'm not going to say the whole thing. But
people would think you turned into a robot if you said the last part. It's like,
yeah,
that's like a fax machine. Anyway.
But we will link to it in the show notes, but you can just do a search for medium.com, Ryan Estrada. He's been posting a lot of useful stuff. And this particular one I thought was like, wow, what a great guy. How to make and sell ebooks of your comics in like 12 and a half seconds. And he gives you all the tools, gives you all the automation stuff. He also posted a tutorial on speed comicking. And here's where I'm going to wrap it up with him, is he's doing all this during his Kickstarter for the Broken Telephone project, which people should go support. It's at kickstarter.com, search for Broken Telephone or Ryan Estrada. It's one of the most interesting comics ideas I've ever heard, where he wrote a story where each chapter is about, and this is one of Ryan's like sort of theses in life, is that everybody's the hero of their own story, right? You don't feel like you're the villain of your story. Of course you don't. Even if you're doing something that causes other people harm, directly or indirectly. And so the heroes of all these individual stories, their actions, as they're trying to be a hero, indirectly harms somebody else. So they become the villain of the next person's story, who is the hero of their own story. Their actions indirectly harm somebody in the next story. So it's this chain of events that starts with the call center. It's one big story. And then he hired on all these artists to draw, all these different artists to draw all these different chapters that have different tones and feels and everything. So it's like kind of like a Traveling Wilburys album as a comic. Right? Because what was Traveling Wilburys? It was like Bob Dylan and George Harrison and Jeff Lynne and Roy Orbison, all these amazing artists from a certain era coming together to create an album together, right?
Mm-hmm.
So support it for the interesting notion, but also support it because it's going to be a really awesome comic and Ryan's paying the artist. Nobody's working on spec. So, but anyway, where I was going with that is that he's doing all these posts around the time of his Kickstarter, which I've been watching carefully. Like, look how he's keeping his name out there. Look how he's keeping everybody, their attention all drawn to him. And all of his posts end, hey, did you enjoy this? You should check out my Broken Telephone Kickstarter. So he's not just haranguing us. He's not just yelling at us to support his thing. He's using this month of fundraising to create a boatload of useful, helpful stuff for people, right? And then to hopefully drive in attention towards this Kickstarter. But everybody wins in that situation, right?
Yeah, I mean, wow, he's stretching to be of service and you know, provide all these things, which, yeah, they happen to have the other effect of, like, now we remember Ryan Estrada and whatnot, and he gets to mention in, you know, by the way, check out this thing, this broken telephone campaign. And that's just, I think it's a really classy way to go about it. So huge respect, Ryan, as usual.
I'm trying to load up the quests now because, yeah, we got to talk about quests, Rob.
We will talk about quests, but there is someone else who does share a lot of really useful things. And okay. Mr. Jersey Drozd does who's an active leaner. You happen to mention some things I did. I think it's important to mention that you do a lot of fantastic podcasts besides the Lean Into Art cast. You do Comics Are Great. And that, of course, is all of these are available at comicsaregreat.com. And in addition to all the different process things that he shares and whatnot. I actually, then of course, Kids Comics Revolution and wonderful, wonderful podcast, obviously focusing on a different age group and whatnot, but very interesting if you're looking at doing all ages comics, super informative and good information there, which you do that with Dave Roman.
Right.
And yep. And of course, Thunder Punch Daily, which I actually re-listened to the latest Thunder Punch Daily again today. And I thought it was interesting how you approach that with, cause I was like, well, you know, I know I talk up Thunder Punch Daily and I couldn't over talk it. Right. I mean, I think, the journal podcasts that came out of, you guys doing Art and Story were all just fantastic. So yeah, I mean, High Adventure Daily from Kevin Cross, The Mark of the Beast from Mark Rudolph, and of course, Thunder Punch Daily from Jersey Drozd are just really great reflections and different flavors of artists going about, you know, thinking about what they do and sharing it. But one interesting thing about Thunder Punch Daily, I thought was a cool tip you shared, that how you accomplish the, it's almost like you revealed how you keep that, the rich on-topicness aspect of Thunder Punch Daily is you mentioned that you will write down the ideas, find the thesis. Once you have that, then you hit record.
Yeah, that is the process that I do tend to do for that show.
Yeah,
is it'll be like anything that bothers me that week or that whenever I did the recording, like something's bugging me. And when I say bugging me, not like making me angry, it could be confusing me, it could be flummoxing me, it could be making me angry, it could just be something that I find myself thinking about a lot for whatever reason, and then I write that sentence out. What's the thing I'm thinking about? Okay, What's the thesis? What's the central idea? Then I hit record, and then I don't spend a lot of time like organizing the thoughts in any kind of outline. You know, I don't sit down and write bullet points or anything. I'm just like, what's the central idea? Mm-hmm. Sometimes an anecdote will occur to me ahead of time. Like, oh, this is kind of like the time when such and such happened. Or this is kind of like something somebody else said once that I really connected with. And I'll maybe write that down. But that's about it. Because for me, when I'm doing the Thunder Punch Daily thing, if I'm going like this the whole time while I'm recording, totally breaks the flow. You know,
well, yeah, you produce the effect of I'm reading from a, you know, bullet points or a presentation.
What else was I going to talk about? Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and a little bit of dipping into the resources, I don't find really that disruptive. But then being depending on, you know, well, every bit of information being a dipping into that set of notes, then that can get a little laborious. Which of course Thunder Punch Daily does not come off in that way at all.
Well, that's very kind of you. That's very kind of you. And you make me feel like, oh, maybe I should go back and listen to him again to see if it's any good. And if it's something I want to do again, it's something it's always on the back of my mind. It's something that like at my day gets interrupted around like the 5 to 6 o'clock range because that's time to go pick up my wife. So like there's this spin down cycle just before that time. where it's like, okay, I can't be like really deep into anything in this particular time, you know, this time to do like little jobs. And it always occurs to me, maybe it's just do a Thunder Punch daily. Same friction occurs, Rob. Same friction occurs. So as happy as it makes some people when I do it. But no, that's nice to hear. That's really nice to hear. Because, you know, I mean, I don't get a whole lot of feedback on the show. There's a couple people who get really happy when I put one out, but I don't get a huge boatload of emails about that thing. So it was nice to know that somebody connected with it.
Super cool.
But then also, can I plug one of my other things? The please. Saturday Supercast.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Big oversight on my part.
No. I just posted what was my favorite episode ever, where I talked with Raina Telgemeier about the Care Bears movie. Did my video go out?
No, we're still live. Okay. I see the middle. Well, let's see. No, I don't know. I'm seeing you. I'm seeing your, yeah. Okay. It's all good. Okay. All
right. But that's at saturdaysupercast.tumblr.com. I moved the archives to Tumblr because the Sugary Cereal site is down for repairs. But we spent an hour and 15 minutes talking about the Care Bears movie. And gosh, it was so much fun. So if you're a fan of cartoons of the late 70s and 80s and early 90s, there's like 38 episodes of that show where it's me and other cartoonist friends just talking at length about cartoon shows we really love.
That is cool. And there are some amazing, really informative storytelling analyses that you guys do where you're like, well, what do we think was so impactful about this story? Boiling down the essence of like the strengths of the He-Man storytelling from the classic eighties and whatnot.
That's the one I was going to say is there's a He-Man two-parter that's back in the archives, like episode 22 or 23, somewhere in the neighborhood. And I break out my whole philosophical thesis of what I think the value is of the secret identities of Adam and Cringer and what they philosophically represent to children as life choices. I will admit it's totally overthinking, but that's why I love the show so much because I've overthought it that way. So yeah, if anybody who's ever watched He-Man, because I talk about it so much and then gone like, what does Jersey see in it? Listen to those two episodes. You can hear all the overthinking I did, and you can find out like the narrative I've constructed around this thing where a bunch of guys are just trying to make a show about toys. So with that,
excellent.
Do we want to do some questing?
Yeah, I'm totally ready.
All right. Time to talk about the quests. The quests are mini art challenges that we issue every month or so on the Leaning to Artcast. Sometimes I'm the quest giver. Sometimes Rob is the quest giver. And these are things that are designed to be done in 2 minutes, 5 minutes per element of the quest. We recently updated the quests where we issue them out in cards. You know, you get three quest cards. And the quest cards can be distinct things or they can build on one another. But each one is designed to be done in 2 minutes or less. We're not trying to add to your huge workload. We're not trying to give you guys a to-do list. Just something quick and fun to get your creative juices flowing. And then when you're done with your quest, you reshare it with us on Twitter using the Lean Into Art or LIA quest tag, right? Mm-hmm. And then when you turn them in before the next show the two following shows after it's issued, then we discuss them on the air. So
yeah, so we've been, we experimented initially where we would take like, you know, 2 weeks to do them, whatever. Now we're taking about 4 weeks and plus they're lighter challenges. The early quests, so we've reached, you know, we're double digits now. We reached 10 quests throughout this year.
Wow.
They're, the earlier ones are definitely a more, you know, higher time commitment, higher complexity, deeper challenge. But then of course, as with any art challenge, you can inject your own simplifying or difficulty factor. Yep. And that allows for tons of variety.
Can I say to that effect, the first quest card that you issued this time, Rob, for this character is lying, that one was hard. I had such a hard time with that one.
You know, it could have been hard also because maybe it wasn't as fully baked as it should be. And I really did make some bad verbiage. Like I put together I would doubt anyone would find dialogue that poor in a story. Yet, you know, maybe like I know a lot of my dialogue starts that way, where it's like I'm just blurting thoughts out of my head, and I am trying my best not to edit, and then I'll end up in a situation where now I have that thing to go edit later on. You know, yay, I captured it, but also, dang, now I have to figure out how to refine what's the most important aspect of this text.
Yeah.
And that was my motivation behind this entire quest, which is to say it is a it's essentially a big editing exercise and sort of a sequence of getting to edit someone else's work, which is hopefully lowering the bar. So it's should be easier to have clarity where you're looking at someone else's work and not seeing your own blind spots where maybe, you know, like it's always hard to edit your own grammar and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So I was hoping that maybe the boost that would give everyone would make it partially fun changing someone else's work and also freeing.
Oh, it was fun. It was just, it was difficult.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's start with mine.
Yeah.
See if I can zoom in a little bit on this. Okay, you start with this line of dialogue, and the line of dialogue that you wrote was, "Did you know that when I found out how much you really mean to me, I knew there was totally no way that I could print the story? And the challenge was rewrite this so it's clear that they are lying, right?"
Mm-hmm.
Difficult challenge in print. And I feel like I kind of broke a rule because I rewrote the line. I wrote it in a totally different way.
And I refute. I understand. I'm glad that came up and we can address. I'll try to make it less ambiguous. Doing rewriting is definitely a form of editing, and I think that is good. Like you're still reacting to that initial catalyst, the raw material, and you're just transforming it further away from its raw form.
Okay. So it wasn't.
I think that's super valid.
So I didn't cheat.
Nope.
Okay. So, but what I decided was, how do I make this character sound like they're lying in just text? And as I was parsing through the word, I thought lying. Lying is being untruthful. Lying is being not direct. Lying is being insincere. Aha. I'll try to find a tone of voice that feels very insincere to me. Insincere. Mm. How do you get to insincere? And I came up with the word condescending. Okay, so I'll write this dialogue like this guy is being very condescending towards somebody who might care about him very much, or her, for that matter. Could be a woman saying this line. Instead is being like this kind of like, you know, putting the finger on the lips like, shh, don't worry. Everything should be okay, kiddo. And I chose words to that effect, right? So like I did like this, da-ba-ba-ba-ba. Don't sweat it, kiddo. I'm not running the story. Turns out I'm just too crazy about you. And that line was like specifically chosen because like if he said like, turns out I love you, that could be perceived as truthful. But turns out I'm just too crazy about you. Nobody says that and means it, right? That is just dripping with insincerity.
Mm.
Go ahead. React.
I think you nailed it. Like, yeah, that's I just love that interpretation and that kind of interpreting the exercise also, I think is, you know, that's what it's for is to gain that kind of practice and insight. Neato.
So then the second step was to take this dialogue and place it into word balloons. Now this is where you got near and dear to my heart because I love sound and I love playing with how sound and space work together in comics. And so, yeah, you know, it's like lay it out in one or two or three word balloons. And so I tried to hack the game and say, like, well, that da-bop-bop has to be spaced in such a way that it's not all in one direct line in a balloon. It has to be at an angle and it has to be kind of stacked. All right, I'll try to make it look like one bubbly balloon. All right. So the da-bop-bop is in one balloon. And then don't sweat it, kiddo. I'm not running the story. Then a trunk. Trunk being the connector between two word balloons, to imply a pause, a little breath, a little moment where this character takes the other person's takes him by the chin kind of thing, puts the thumb on the chin, like, don't worry your pretty little head about this. Turns out I'm just too crazy about you, right? Mm. Then finally, you asked us to draw one face sketch that matches the emotion of the word balloon from Quest card, 10 card 2, the one we just talked about. Then draw another that conflicts with the word balloon's emotion. Finally, note which one you feel accomplishes the story intent goal. This character is lying and why. And so I did a sleazy face, and then I did a slightly more sincere face. And really, all I figured was version one feels the most direct. If we want the readers to unambiguously feel that this character is lying, then a sleazy face seems the most effective. But if I want to create a little bit of ambiguity there, like a little question in the reader's mind, is this character just have bad grammar and talks real condescendingly but actually does care? Then a sincere face coupled with that dialogue would achieve that, right? So it all depends on what the context is.
Yeah, that is really cool. Which one took you the longest?
Oh, well, let's go back to it. Let me see. This one took under 5 minutes, and the second one took me under 2 minutes. This one, like, I had at the moment I wrote the dialogue. Like, I know exactly how I would balloon this. The longest one was the first card. That one took over 5 minutes. It was maybe almost 10 minutes of really sorting it out in my head. So.
Cool.
And then we got Leaners who turned in quests. We got Joe Gillespie, talking about him again.
Mm-hmm.
So his first card went from, here's the original line of dialogue. Did you know that when I found out how much you really mean to me, I knew there was totally no way that I could print the story? And see, I think he did more following the instructions. He sort of restructured it. You mean too much to me. But it's, oh, no, he interpreted too.
No, but he totally interpreted. Yes.
But it's only when I finally figured that out that I knew, I really knew, I couldn't print the story. And yeah, like me, he took over 5 minutes for that one. And card two, here he goes. He ballooned it out. You mean too much to me. Second balloon. But it's only when I figured that out that I knew. Third balloon, I really knew. Fourth balloon, I couldn't print the story. And then here he went with two different faces. He went with nonchalant and annoyed for the two different ways to say it.
Yeah. Interesting combinations with that. Like the annoyed would feel so severe, right?
Yeah, well, and it's like what I like about the line of dialogue that you started with is, and this is something Joyce picked up when we get to her quest, is that when I found out how much you really mean to me, that doesn't have a positive or negative connotation. It could be either. It's ambiguous, right? When I find out how much you mean to me, that could be like your most hated enemy, right? I couldn't print the story. The story was originally something that glamorized you, and it would have saved your business. But when I found out how much you really mean to me, I couldn't print the story. You must be destroyed, right? But then she's not lying.
Yeah. And that's a little, I know that this is an experiment too, where like maybe there's some playful ambiguity there, which can be a wonderful ground to experiment with, but yet, it can also be challenging and it's interesting. I'm seeing there's a trend of like that initial one, it seems to take longer overall. Right. Yep. But then as the exercise continues, overall things get much faster because that foundational, like what we've decided, we worked through what we're trying to get out of this by editing that text.
Awesome job,
and
Joe.
Things. Yeah, that's really cool.
No, you're right. You're right. Like the most cognitive load is on the first card. And then after that, it's because I think a lot of us, at least for me, I was kind of figuring out the faces and the ballooning while I was writing that first line of dialogue. It like that was happening along with figuring out the dialogue, right?
Yeah, I pretty much had moved on. Like when I was doing it, I was like already thinking of the word balloons, especially.
Yeah,
and I hadn't quite made up my mind on the face, but I was I felt like I almost sloughed the initial card because I'd already was working on card two. But yeah. Cool. So you're looking at...
Now this is Joyce's.
Joyce's, cool.
And this is, at inkgizmo.com, blog.inkgizmo.com. We'll link to it in the show notes. Her first card took 20 minutes.
Mm. Yeah, well, I know. Sorry about that, Joyce.
No, we do this to ourselves, dude. You know, yeah. It invites thinking, and we want to think hard about it. What did she say here? Why she used color on those lines? Because she like sort of.
No, I thought that was really interesting. How she has these highlights. It's almost like she's sectioning the. Does that relate to maybe exploring the pacing or the word balloons or the emphasis or something? That's cool. Yeah.
Oh, and so this is another interesting thing she brings up. She's like, I read a couple of different interpretations of when I found out how much you mean to me. An implied you mean a lot and possibly a hidden how much you mean to me equals nothing, though that would be more sarcastic and depend heavily on the character's unknown personalities. And she's explaining her whole thought process here. I figured that since the speaker was mentioning it directly to the listener, she wanted the listener to believe that their strong relationship led to not printing the story, implying that it was a positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah,
super mindful. Wow. You know what I mean? That's just considering the relationship and like, you know, this is why the person would be saying it. And, mm-hmm. and it just, yeah, giving all sorts of context to the editing choices.
She doesn't explain why she used that highlighting though, where she highlights, did you know that in pink? Then when I found out how much you really mean to me in blue, I knew there was totally no way that I could print the story in yellow.
Overall, those seem like the three key separate ideas.
Yeah,
talked about. But yeah, I don't see a direct relation with the next steps. But
you really, and so she changed it out. Like, you really mean so much to me. That's why I just couldn't print the story.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get to two.
Gosh, that's such a better edit than the original dialogue.
Yeah, it is. Sorry, Rob. And she's got it ballooned. Two balloons. Trying to imply a longer pause between the sentences. Yes, I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Approximately 10 minutes. And then finally, she does the two faces. This was probably the easiest card for her, she says. After all the time that I spent thinking about how the lines would be delivered during the rewriting of the first card. There we go, Rob. You did one. Yeah, this one. I think that's good, though. I mean, speaking from like a pedagogy thing, is that you want it to get progressively easier for the students, right? You want it like progressively harder and more sophisticated, but you want it to feel easier for them so that they're having fun with it, not leveling up to the point where it's like, well, now what? So,
yeah, what's the point of leveling up if you don't feel the fun,
right?
Of getting stuff, making stuff happen. Yeah, this was cool. I actually in my gut, I thought, I wonder if I'm going to end up doodling word balloons on the third one. I was wondering if I was going to do that. I ended up not doing that, but I think it's really cool that Joyce did, because, you know, obviously the exercises or whatever you want to make of them to try to accomplish it.
And I like that she made this connection too. She says like the smile, she did a positive face, like a sincere looking face, and then like a sort of how would you describe that second face? The eyes are looking off to the side, it's distracted, almost distracted, or yeah, averting gaze, let's say that.
It's disconnected, aloof.
Aloof, good. So she says the first one, there's an emotion match, feels more like they're trying to hide their lie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to sell it. Whereas the second one, there's emotion conflict, can easily be read as sarcasm.
It was interesting. I think more of us picked a match as opposed to the conflict.
Yeah. As I said, I think it depends on the context of the story. I think it gets really tricky.
Oh, totally. But it is interesting over the course of the exercise, what people chose.
Now we get to E. Wang's. He changed it to, now why would I print that story? Never. You mean the world to me. So E obviously chose the positive interpretation of what the character means to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get to the ballooning. Again, I just spent like a few minutes praising E's abilities with sound. Of course, the ballooning is going to be great. Mm-hmm. Now why would I print that story? Never. Interesting that E chose to make the first balloon disconnected from the others, right? The never and the you mean the world to me has a trunk. implying that there's like a less of a pause between those two balloons, whereas the first one is a separate balloon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Artificially disconnects the answer from the question. The never could now associate with anything else said or unsaid. A pause, then the sweet talk.
Mm.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love this kind of intentionality. This is great. All right. We got two faces that he did. One is more serious, looking directly in the eye. And the other was playful, hiding the eyes, reflecting on the glasses, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. That's like a very manga technique where all of a sudden a character's eyes, you know, having glasses, then you have the advantage of you could include the eyes, you could exclude them. And yeah, hiding the eyes. It's interesting. Yeah, the playful interpretation. I suppose, yeah, it does. It's such a weird effect and cool because it can be. It gets more abstract, right?
Yeah,
it's less concrete what they're exactly trying to show.
As he says right here, you know, like be the one with the hidden eyes is a relatively dramatic way of portraying deceit and hiding, right? It's figurative.
Mm. Yeah.
Concealing the eyes to conceal the intent.
Cool.
Love these quest entries. God, these are all so good. All right, we gotta go to the teacher now, or the quest giver.
Yeah. Exactly. The whole intent is to play along, and it's yeah. Take the challenge myself. What's funny is so I took card one, and I was already like thinking ahead, and maybe it's partially how I go about doing the cards, where I put them all in one papyrus infinite scrolling.
That's what I did too.
Layout. And then, it's just really convenient. Because then it's like it feels like okay, it's a game, and now I go, and I try to cover the whole ground in, you know, just turning a timer on and off in between. But then, I really didn't like that initial take on the text, and I really simplified it, and chose mostly a quick edit instead of a rewrite. Even though I really liked, I noticed with Joyce, someone had posted one already, and I thought, that's a cool approach.
Yeah, I think Joyce was one of the first ones to do it.
Where she had one of the took a rewrite approach. So, but what's funny is, and then in card two, I ended up cheating because I didn't literally use the same. But this is it flows into my habits as far as when I do comics, I'm committed to keep making it more refined each stage. So I end up tweaking it. Like I'm putting the words in the balloons and it ended up changing. Whereas I was emphasizing them and visualizing it, going from the connected, you mean the world to me. And I do have a trunk instead of a space between the balloons, and then there's no way I could print that story. And I decided to emphasize the word I, to where it's like there's something really ooky going on here.
Well, it suggests that the story was printed,
and or the secret's out in some way, right?
Right.
It's like, and it's like, well, I let my competitor print it. I let, yeah, it's been leaked. And yep. But it's not in my hands. And then three, I thought that maybe there is sort of a, because again, I didn't know really the relationships between these characters. I just made them up for the scenario, right? So I started to imagine the character expressing the dialogue was worried about getting caught, or sort of like what the repercussions would be of being found out as lying, that, I thought it would, sort of, instead of trying to show show some sincerity, but to play with the falseness that was coming through, that they're panicking about that falseness almost.
The one on the left is C-3PO's reaction, and the one on the right is Han Solo's reaction.
Yeah.
Right, it's like no, there's no way, yeah. I could have done it. No, not me. And then the other one's like, the false concern is like, no, there's no way I could have done it. I'm being smooth. I'm being suave about this thing.
Yeah. Hey, I'm in this with you.
Yeah. Right.
Yep. Yep. Well, cool. We have completed Quest 10.
Quest 10. And good job, everybody. I mean, seriously.
Yeah. Super really cool. Thank you for participating and like sharing all the that super thoughtful, so much intentionality in that. I love the feedback too. I can't remember, like, there was a couple of posts that mentioned just kind of questioning the actual challenge too. And I think that's really good as well.
No, I love seeing people's thought process, and I love when people, their thought process reflects like a real intention behind it. And like, I don't know, I just wait for inspiration to hit me and then it just happens and then it comes from a magical place. Well, I guess sometimes, yeah, I get that too. But I also really, really enjoy, well, I'm a fan of creator commentary, you know, and I like that kind of intellectual backtracking of reverse engineering of what was I doing when I did this thing? So much fun to read about. So yes, it made me very happy. Everybody made me very happy this week.
Mission accomplished. It's funny. We should, let's consider this a call out. Like I'm curious, like what, also how much fun everyone had when they do this, or like if you were normally take a quest and you're like, I don't think so on this one.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, if you had time to do it and you still didn't, I'm like, I'd just be curious to hear what you think, so we can keep refining and making these very inclusive and approachable.
Yeah. And probably the best way to do that would be to reach out to us on Twitter.
Yeah. I do. Yeah. Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We do get email, but it's, I think email invites long questions, whereas Twitter invites piecemeal conversation, right?
Exactly. Like we can have a quick conversation on it, whereas versus the, you know, where we have to put our top coats and suits on and gallop across the land with our letter and you know, make sure we're stamping it with our wax seals and all that. Let's just chat quick.
Is email that antiquated, Rob?
Yes. No. It's the digital equivalent of the wax seals and the horses.
You've been cordially invited. Okay, well, thanks everybody for participating in the quest. So as I hinted at earlier, no new quest will be issued this episode. We'll wait till January to do that one. You guys can take the holidays, you know, spend time with your loved ones or with your loved art supplies. Make something for you. Make some stuff. Rob, we didn't get a chance to talk about the holiday stuff on this episode. I don't know if we want to. Do we want to do it on Extra Lean? Maybe we want to save that for
Maybe
Extra
we
Lean.
Do that. Yeah.
Okay. So here's a tease for what you'll be missing if you don't check out Extra Lean. Right. What did you put together? You put together like a.
It's okay. So the idea was maybe we could try to do an episode segment on if you thought of gift giving as like you also make things, or you make things to accompany something that you purchase or what have you, like the how you wrap or card or whatever you use to accompany a gift, or that is a gift, like you just make something for someone. I was interested in exploring some of the things that I've had fun making in the past as gifts. So, and of course here from Jersey as well. And just really curious, like where that would go, because I think when we do this for, you know, you get paid to do a thing. Not all of us are interested in then giving that thing.
Right.
So I was curious to explore that too. So making gifts art challenge style was the headline.
Love it. Love it, and I want to do it on the next Extra Lean, which we'll be recording next week. And then it's an audio-only show. We don't have a public feed for it. The way to get it is to sign up for our newsletter at leanintoart.com. And then Rob issues out little magazine newsletters every once in a while with links to all the Extra Leans. And the newsletter is really just like a collection of resources that we amass on all of our different networks and sites in one handy place for you to consume it, right?
Yeah, so it's meant to be like this pleasant, fun list of ways to just quickly catch up with what we've been making. You know, you get the bonus stuff for the extra lean, and then yeah, some handy things that have been distilled down from the stuff that we've been thinking about sharing or that we have shared.
And if you were around for the beginning of this episode, you know how hard Rob thinks about being of service to people. So you know that newsletter is not going to be spam. It's going to be very carefully crafted things designed with your delight in mind, right?
Try to, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Rob, this was a fun one. It was cool to get to talk about this stuff.
Really? Yeah, thank you, Jersey. Thanks. Was great idea. Wonderful chance to visit the Leaners studios, and then just the idea of being a leaner and whatnot, which we should revisit this sometime.
I think it was something we should do periodically, because it's like there's a lot of different people who interact with the show, but they don't necessarily know each other, right? Yeah. And that was part of the idea. It's like okay, you like lean into art. Here's some other people who like lean into art, and they're all doing interesting things. Let's talk about them a little bit, and let's talk about why it's interesting. But yeah, if you want to gravitate around us and interact more in a community fashion, we've got a Facebook page, we've got a Google Plus page, and we've got a Tumblr. So all of them are, guess what? Lean into art. You can just find them all there, just by searching for Lean Into Art on all those different places, right?
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, let's get out of here, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with another live show, Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on YouTube and Google Plus. Find us on this feed. So, gosh, anything I'm missing, Rob? Anything else that we need to say?
No, that was cool. Yeah, and if by all means, if you do enjoy the show, give us and you're out on wherever whatever's at your convenience. If you're visiting us through iTunes, we'd love you to give us a quick rating, because it's always helpful to let's grow the community of leaners. That's essentially it helps us be discoverable, and it's a simple way to just say thanks if you're so inclined. Or you could say, darn it, if you're so inclined, because technically you don't have to, give us 5 stars, right? So, yeah, there's iTunes, and then also YouTube is a great place as well, because a lot of people find us there. So doing a thumbs up on the video, much appreciated.
Definitely. So, okay, well, thank you, Rob. Thanks, everybody, for downloading, listening, and watching. Until next time, I have been Jersey Drozd of leanintoart.com and Jersey on Twitter.
Yeah, thank you, Jersey. And I have been Rob Stenzinger of Lean Into Art and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter.
Okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.